Welcome to the Doggy Dojo. I'm your host, Susan Light, a Los Angeles-based dog trainer and behavior consultant on a quest to become worthy of the title Sensei of the Doggy Dojo. Trigger warning, today we're talking about behavioral euthanasia. It's not an easy topic to talk about, and today's episode may be hard for some to listen to. If you don't know what behavioral euthanasia is, it's when an animal is euthanized due to their behavior. If you've been through it or are considering it, I want to give you a big hug. It's one of the hardest things I can think of in the pet world. I hope everyone who listens today can have compassion for families that have found themselves having to make this decision. There's no place for blame or shame here. Today I'm joined by someone who has such a big heart for people who've been through this. Her credentials include a certificate of pet dog training, being a clinical member of the Association of Animal Behavior Consultants, and a certificate of behavior consulting canine knowledge assessed. She founded Dogs in the Park, which she co-owns with her husband, and she runs a unique Facebook group called Losing Lulu that is a support group for families who've been through behavioral euthanasia. Please welcome Sue Alexander. Welcome to the podcast, Sue.
Why, thank you, Susan. It's wonderful to be here today.
So we're talking about behavioral euthanasia today. What is behavioral euthanasia?
Well, behavioral euthanasia is any euthanasia, and euthanasia, of course, means good death, that has occurred as a result of a behavior problem. So most of the time when we think about euthanasia, we think about helping an animal who is profoundly ill to pass on and to improve their welfare by alleviating pain, or if they're very elderly. But in the case of behavioral euthanasia, we are often talking about animals who are physically healthy, but they may have a profound behavior problem that is negatively impacting their welfare. And it's really important to understand that we are not talking about puppy nipping or something minor. And I know we're going to talk in a little bit about the issues, but we are talking about very entrenched, serious behavior problems.
Yeah. So who makes the decision that it, you know, who's the one that has to say, it's going to be a behavioral euthanasia for this animal?
That's a really interesting question. And I know I've certainly had clients who've come into me as a behavior consultant and said, do I have to? Mm. And, you know, it's not up to me as the behavior consultant. It's not even up to the veterinarian as the veterinarian to decide for you. That is always in the hands of the individual, unless there is a legal court order demanding that the animal be euthanized. But sometimes when I'm working with a family, we will, you know, we'll see a dog who's got a behavior problem, and we're, you know, working with the family, and I will come to the realization and recognition that perhaps this is not safe to live with, or perhaps the animal is suffering. In which case, I'm going to say to the client, I think we need to talk about behavioral euthanasia. And talking about behavioral euthanasia does not mean that I am saying you must euthanize your dog.
I can't
say that. I'm not allowed to say that.
Right.
But I may say, I think we need to talk about this. So, you know, then we would have a conversation about it. And the client might say to me, you know, You've brought up some good points, but I'm not ready to make that decision today. And I'm going to say to them, that's fine. I will continue to help and continue to work with you as long as it is safe to do so.
Yeah.
Or I might say, you know, I think we should make an appointment, go in and speak with your veterinarian and have a three-way discussion about behavioral euthanasia. And often the veterinarian will have sent the dog my way, because they say, I think we should see Sue before we talk about behavioral euthanasia. So it's really important that pet guardians understand that when you own a pet, that is not your trainer's decision. It's not your veterinarian's decision. And unless a court has ordered that an animal be euthanized, that is solely your decision. But as a certified dog behavior consultant in practice, I actually have the skill set to speak to you about some of the criteria. And I know I've said it a minute ago. We'll get to that. I know I'm foreshadowing. Shall we call it something literary and make us
Sure, I
sound very
love it.
well foreshadow. That way everybody will keep listening.
Yeah, coming later in the episode. So what types of issues are most often represented when you're talking about, they've been referred from the vet, they're very serious issues. What types of issues tend to end up as behavioral euthanasias?
Well, the first one that is the low-hanging fruit, if you will, is aggression. And
Sure.
the reason that aggression is the low-hanging fruit is it can be so incredibly dangerous to live with. So I have worked with dogs who have mauled people. I've worked with a number of dogs who have killed other dogs.
Ooh.
I've worked with dogs who are aggressive to a specific dog, but not dogs in general. And those are the dogs that people think, oh, well, I could never live with that level of risk to me or my family. And I want to tell you, I absolutely agree. When we're talking about a safety issue, I think those are the dogs that we should try and help. But if we are not seeing progression towards success in fairly short order, if we can't keep people safe, then euthanasia is something that we must talk about. Doesn't mean we must do it, but it means we must talk about it because
Yeah.
it's not safe to live with that kind of an animal. And also, that level of aggression is an indication of a lack of good welfare for the dog. And we can give those dogs sometimes the best welfare possible. We can feed them the best food. We can give them the most appropriate exercise. We can give them humane, thoughtful, and kind training and still face a dog who is profoundly dangerous. And I've worked with many, many, many dogs like that.
I'm so glad you said that because I think that people lose the fact that behavior is a symptom often. Behavior is functional. It's not in a vacuum. So if this dog is so aggressive, it's just part of what's going on with them.
Absolutely. And I think that something I tell the vet students that I have mentored is behavior is medicine and medicine is behavior. And what I mean by that is an awful lot of those dogs, I saw one study that said 70% of dogs with aggression have a comorbidity with pain. And what that means is the dog is hurting and the dog is aggressive. And those two things happen at the same time. So anytime we're talking about aggression, I definitely want the veterinarian to give that dog a good physical exam. But sometimes there are dogs who are just miswired, who are going to be aggressive to their families for what
For
I
no
would say
reason.
is, well, and I hate saying for no reason, but for no discernible reason. So, everybody in the house is kind. Everybody in the house is familiar to the dog. And, I had one case many, many years ago where the dog would only aggress at night and only if you got out of bed. So, once the lights were turned out at night, if you got up to go to the bathroom, the dog would attack you.
Oh my gosh.
Well, there, yeah, that is. I hate to be colloquial about it or to downplay it, but that dog had a very serious screw loose. We kept the dog in the crate and the dog was fine at night. However, one family member objected strongly to the crate and would let the dog out at night. And that, in the end, what I said is, it's not safe for you to live with this dog. If you can find an environment where this dog will be reliably crated at night, we can keep him going. And if you can't, then we need to talk about behavioral euthanasia. So that's kind of the obvious problem that we see for behavioral euthanasia, but there are others. There are things like dogs with compulsive disorders. So, you know, some of your listeners may have a dog who chases the ceiling fan. And that may be cute if the dog gives it up after a minute, but if you have a dog who chases the ceiling fan until he is so dizzy he can't stand up, he lies down, vomits, stands up, and does it again. And if you live in a situation where you must have a ceiling fan, that dog's welfare is going to be profoundly, profoundly compromised. And you may need to choose then to consider behavioral euthanasia if medication does not work. And that's one where medication might work. There are others, though, where there are dogs who will do things like chase lights and shadows. Those dogs may just not be able to cope at all, because as soon as you have any level of light, they start chasing shadows and they start chasing lights and they fixate. And those dogs have a rotten life. You know, that's a horrible way to live.
That there frustration all will, the time.
Absolutely. There are dogs who have compulsions where they'll do things like they'll suck their flanks, or they'll lick their wrists, or they'll chew their toenails. And they may do that to the extent where they, you know, injure themselves and require surgery to repair it. There are tail chasers. There are also dogs who have such profound separation anxiety that if you close the door to go to the bathroom, the dog will then begin to have a panic attack. And not all of those dogs are dogs that we can help. But I think when you think about this more in the context of welfare, it becomes very clear that if we can't help them, what we are doing is we are allowing the dogs to live in a profoundly poor welfare situation.
So how do you know that it's time? How do you know that it's not worth trying to find? Let me start that over.
Well, and let's do the worth thing. I know that we want to jump back and say, let's not say worth. But there are a few words that I think that we have to think about, okay? Is it worth it? Implies that there is a value to the animal's life. And that tells us that welfare is really important when it comes to what we're talking about. And welfare is really tricky to measure. We've got, you know, the five domains, or what used to be called the five freedoms, where we say the animal should have a freedom from fear. They should have a freedom from hunger, thirst, and discomfort. They should have freedom from disease and illness and injury, freedom to exhibit normal species typical behavior. There's one more freedom, and I can't remember what it is. And that's one way of measuring welfare. There's also the three circles method, where we talk about physical health versus natural behavior. And then there's one other. When I have to do a welfare presentation, I talk more cogently about it, because I make sure I've got the models in front of me. But, you know, there are different ways of looking at welfare. But I think one of the things that we've got to keep in mind when we're talking about dog behavior is, when we are talking about a dog, we are talking about a dog within the context of a family. This is not a zoo animal. So if I said to you, you know, I would, Susan, I've got this great animal. I want him to live inside your house. This is a 1,200-pound Brahma bull. I want you to think about, you know, first off, even if this is the nicest Brahma bull in the world, how are you going to get to the bathroom from your bedroom? Like, how's that going to happen? So your welfare would be profoundly compromised by having all that hay and then all of that bull manure.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about.
Right. So if I said to you, you know, you're going to have to live with this Brahman bull, you would say, Sue, my welfare will be deeply compromised. And this is the problem with dogs with behavior problems.
But why does that feel selfish? Why does that feel selfish for us to say, you know, that I don't want that to negatively impact my welfare.
That is a logical. Really, really good question. But it's going to lead into, I'm going to foreshadow again, how we support people who've had to go through this. Because
okay.
We feel really badly
when
we euthanize an animal. And it doesn't matter if this is an animal that you've had since he was a puppy and now he's, you know, 23 and he's the oldest dog in the world and we euthanize him because his welfare is compromised. You're going to feel badly about it because it's a loss.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if it's a 2-year-old dog, we feel really badly. But I have to tell you, any time that I've had to help a family to make this decision, what I am aware of with it, and I am so profoundly aware of this, is that I, for instance, living on a farm, lived with 2 very aggressive dogs for 7 years.
Wow.
We have 9 zones in our house. We did not have overnight house guests. And if we did have overnight house guests, one of the dogs would go to the kennel and one of the dogs would stay home and then we had no problems.
Hmm.
So I could live with those 2 dogs in complete safety. And in 7 years, we had 2 oopses, both of which ended up with the dogs at the veterinarian's clinic. I was willing to live with that level of management. But I have a sister who has 4 children. There is no way she could have kept her children safe or those dogs safe. And her choice might have been to euthanize, and it would have been the right choice.
Yeah.
And I think we need to understand that when somebody makes the choice to euthanize, we have to take the family's welfare into account every bit as much as we have to take the dog's welfare. I would not ask a 4-year-old child to live with 2 dogs who were intent on killing each other because it's not safe. And it also teaches that child some very weird things about how we live with dogs. My husband and I are both professional dog trainers. We know that this is a temporary blip in the, you know, hopefully 90 years that we each have. This is a temporary 7-year blip. But in a 4-year-old's life, 4 to 11 living with that, even if I could guarantee that that child would be kept safe, and I will tell you that in one of the fights those 2 dogs had, I was injured and ended up having to get stitches. So I know what I'm doing, and I'm an adult, and I'm large, and I have the tools to separate dogs, and I still got injured. So,
and you made this choice, which a child doesn't
exactly
have the ability to make. Yeah,
exactly. So we can't just ever say, well, this dog can be fixed, so we have to, his life is worth it, because that worth then says, well, does that dog live in a neighborhood? I wouldn't have tried to live with those 2 dogs in town. I live on a 3-acre farm. I don't have neighbors. I don't risk that the newspaper kid is going to come and drop off the local community newspaper and the door will open and a dog will get out who shouldn't. I don't have that risk because I live in the country. You can't get here without a car. So when I look at these things, I think that we need to really take into account, where does the family live? Where does the dog live? Who is the family? I had one family as clients where there was one woman, an adult, who lived in the house full time. Her husband and her father were both in the Merchant Marine, which meant that they were home for 2 months and away for 4 months and home for a week and away for 6 months. Her brother also lived part-time in the house. He was a long-haul trucker. So he was in the house usually for between 1 and 3 nights a week. That house had all adults, and it was still not possible to keep the dog safe because none of the adults were there consistently enough for the dogs to get to know them. So, you know, it's so hard because what we want to say is, well, obviously you could fix this. Well, no, not obviously. Even when we really, really want to, even when we highly value life and the life of these animals, we can't always do that. And we have to be incredibly aware of that.
If you need support for behavioral euthanasia, search Losing Lulu on Facebook. I'll also put the link in the show notes, along with Sue's website, www.dogsinthepark.ca. We'll be right back. Yeah, and it's so hard. I think what's important for people to know is that nobody asks for this situation. Nobody gets a dog expecting to have to make this decision. Ever.
Absolutely not.
So people find themselves in these situations with an animal that they've fallen in love with. And
absolutely.
It's a lose-lose situation, and it's nobody's fault. So it's really comforting to know that there are some paradigms, though, that you can talk through, you know, welfare and really help people make those decisions. And I think, you know, if people understand that nobody makes this lightly, and we want to show compassion, how can we help someone? I will say, I feel like there's such a stigma that most people will not tell you if they went through this. But if
That's
someone
true,
trusts
and it's
you
getting
enough,
better.
Yeah, if someone trusts you enough to tell you this, what can we do? What do we say to support them? What can we do to really help them through this?
I encourage anybody who knows someone who has gone through the loss of a young dog to take a breath before they ask a question. And the questions that you want to ask are things like, how are you and your family coping? If you say, oh my goodness, what happened?
Yeah.
You're automatically getting into this bombastic state of it's loud and it's assertive. But if instead you say, how are you coping? Would you like it if I took your kids to school tomorrow morning? Would that give you a little bit of elbow room? Be very specific in your offer of help. Can I mow your lawn for you? Just some of these random things, people will come back to you years later and they will say, I thought it was really weird that when I told you my dog died, you said, can I mow your lawn? But I recognize now that it was a concrete thing that you wanted to take off my plate. Mm. And we each have our own ways of doing this. But, you know, the bottom line is knowing what happened doesn't benefit you. You're not going to benefit to know that it was a behavioral euthanasia.
Yeah.
But if you can say, I see that you're hurting and I've sent you a casserole, or I see that you're hurting and I sent you a card, at some point somebody's going to say, you know, he bit my babysitter, right? Mm-hmm. And at that point you can say, well, no, I didn't know that, or yes, I did. And then the other person can say, I feel terrible, or I'm so angry,
yeah,
or I'm so ashamed. And you have an opening there to say, I can hear what you're telling me, and I want you to know that I know you did everything you possibly could. You would never intend for anybody to have ever gotten hurt. Or you can say, I know that you wouldn't let a dog go who was not suffering. I know that you did the right thing. And those things are so important for friends. Oh my gosh.
Mm.
You know, I remember when I actually had to euthanize a horse for a behavior problem. And one of my very, very good friends is a veterinarian. And she said, I heard about Kayak. And I said, yeah, I'm really upset. And she said, do you want me to come? Because I know how to euthanize a horse. And if your veterinarian needs an extra set of hands, I am happy to be there. And
wow,
that was like, oh my gosh, I tear up just thinking about it.
Mm.
And, you know, then we had a feast afterwards, and everybody came to my house and we had a big feast and we sat together, and I had all the people I cared about sitting around having a feast. And we were able to do two things. We were able to remember Kayak in her best light instead of remembering the worst parts. But it was okay to be sad, and it was okay to be joyous.
Yeah.
because all of those are part of the loss. Grief is so complicated because we feel guilty and angry and sad and happy and relieved. And it's that grief and relief. We're grieving, we're sad, but we're also relieved that our beloved, beloved animal is no longer suffering. And I believe that when you get a veterinarian to agree that behavioral euthanasia is the right choice, then they are actually putting their license on the line. They are saying, I agree that this animal's suffering is so profound, or this animal is so profoundly dangerous, that your welfare is deeply compromised. I believe that strongly enough that I will bet my license, and they will help you to euthanize the dog. So this is, even though it's your choice, this is never solely your responsibility. And what I think we can say when we're talking about how to help people is, I recognize that no veterinarian would have helped you to euthanize your dog if there had been any better option.
Yeah, that this is so good for people to hear, because I think that everyone fears this judgment. And I mean, the internet can be a horrible place. And what's amazing about Losing Lulu, and I'll, you know, link that in the show notes so people can find it if they ever need it, which we certainly hope people don't, but it's there as a community, is that, there's no judgment and there's only support. And, you know, we know that nobody wants to be there and that everybody just needs some support. But, I think we're so used to just hearing all these judgments and feeling this guilt and fear that we made the wrong decision.
You know? And we moderate Lulu very, very, very carefully so that there is no judgment.
Yeah.
We remove any comments that are judgmental. We do not allow naming, blaming, or shaming. So if you got your dog from a dodgy source and you say, you know, I got my dog from this place and it's terrible, we won't allow you to put that up, because that is naming a place. And that's not what Losing Lulu's about.
Yeah.
We do not allow anybody to say, well, you know, you could have, you should have, I would have, I could have.
Yeah.
We don't allow that. Those come straight down right away. And we never allow anybody to say, well, it was X person's or X organization's fault, because that isn't going to be helpful. And that's all judgmental. And that all gets moderated out of Losing Lulu.
Yeah. It's such an amazing place. I don't think that we have actually mentioned what Losing Lulu is, though. Do you want to tell people quickly before we sign off
Losing Lulu is the online Facebook-based support group that does peer-to-peer support for people who have experienced behavioral euthanasia. We don't talk about making the decision. We just talk about the grief end of it. So if you have gone through behavioral euthanasia, and I really hope that you don't, then please look us up. You can find us at losinglulu.com, and then you can connect to the Facebook group there. And we are very, very happy to have you, and terribly sorry that you need us. And that is kind of one of the things that we talk about there. And you can look about why it's called Losing Lulu. There was a Lulu, and when she was lost, we found the group. And you will find that there are more than 25,000 people who have gone through a behavioral euthanasia as well. And not just dogs. People like me who've gone through equine behavioral euthanasias, llamas, goats, a pig, cats, many cats. A snake, bunnies. So lots and lots of animals have had to be euthanized because of behavior problems. And what we have in common is that we will support one another.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I want to thank you not just for talking to me today, but also for all the work that you do through that group, because I know that it's been a huge lifeline in a dark time for thousands of people.
You're most welcome, Susan. Thank you for having me on the on the podcast, and you know, I'm always happy to talk to people about behavior and training, and my little corner of the behavior and training world has evolved to be behavioral euthanasia.
Well, I'm glad there's someone there when people need them. Thank you for stopping by the dojo this week. This is your aspiring sensei, Susan Light, signing off. You can find me at doggydojopodcast.com, or I'm Susan Light LA on Instagram, Pinterest, and Facebook. The music was written by Mac Light. You can find him at maclightsongwriter.com. If you like the show, you can support it by subscribing, sharing it with your friends, rating it, and reviewing it on Apple Podcasts. Just a reminder, this podcast is intended for educational purposes only and does not constitute advice or professional services by either the host or any of the guests. I'll be back in 2 weeks with another new episode of the Doggy Dojo.